Yeah, welcome back to the Lars Resort. Yet another episode. What a week. So many the episodes, they're just coming thick and fast. You're being bombarded with episodes. It's a bad time for you if you're tired of listening to Peter and I, but you know what? I'm hoping you're not. I'm certainly not tired of hanging out with Peter. And we saw the Manchester United Liverpool game. There were just too. We couldn't. I certainly felt I couldn't move on with my life until we'd had a chat about it. So we just kind of went and got the recording devices ready and had a chat about what was really one of the all time great FA Cup games, I think. Without further ado, let us hop straight into the conversation I just had with Peter. Okay, so this is not something that I typically do, or that we typically do, the sort of just one game reaction pod.
But we had to do it.
Because it was, I mean, there was just too much. There was too much going on. It felt silly since we were here and we had like the recording device at our disposal and we just saw what we saw. We can't move on with our lives, I think, until we sort of... We need to process this. We need to have a conversation about the thing that just happened.
There was more content in 120 minutes of one game than there is in a normal Premier League full slate of games weekend.
Yeah, no, that was loopy and a half. And I was just thinking halfway through the game, between this and the Chelsea game, which was also fairly chaotic, there's a full pod's worth of stuff out of the two FA Cup games. I was thinking that in the first half of Manchester United.
Wait, can I preface this conversation with the following? And please accept this as the compliment I'm about to pay you.
Mm-hmm.
Watching that game
Watching
that game in your living room with Lars Sivertsen is exactly the giant amount of fun you imagined it would be. That was the best game watching at home on television experience I've ever had, Lars. Kudos to you.
Thank you. I think the listeners are very glad to know that.
Invite Lars over to watch games with you. That's the lesson I'm trying to pass on here.
But just to preface this whole thing, like just to wrestle this, it's gotten out of control already, Peter.
Sorry.
What the listeners should know, and I think we touched on it in one of the last episodes, is that this game has been a weird sort of non-entity to us in the week leading up to this, right?
I literally had forgotten it was taking
you
place.
Did. You had
to remind me.
I knew it was happening, but like, which is strange, right? Because Peter's become one of the people I sort of communicate with the most and talk about football with the most. And I'm visiting him for the first time, and Peter's made all these plans. And the fact that Man United are playing actual Liverpool on the Sunday. Never featured in our plans. We never considered like going to a bar to watch it. It was such a strange non-entity in our lives. And I kind of brought up, isn't it weird that this game is happening and we're not even thinking about it? And we kind of logicked our way into it. And we had this conversation with our good friend Andy Swift, who's a big Liverpool fan, of course. We had this conversation with him on Friday. It's the reason is because for Liverpool, the FA Cup is kind of not the biggest fish they've got happening. Whereas you, as a despondent Man United fan, were so certain you'd get tanked, so you just didn't want to think about it. You'd just kind of gone into withdrawal a little bit.
Who'd blame me?
Yeah, maybe. So we didn't make big plans and had no expectations for this. But of course, it became one of the classic FA Cup games. And one of the classic sort of banter games of all time. There were so many odd things that happened during the course of these.
If you had to rank the odd talking points of this match, could you even begin to try to sort that out?
So I just still think, not in terms of significance, but in terms of just a thing that made me laugh and that I'll remember for a long time. I still think Andre Onana just coming at a random point towards the end of the second half, I think it was. United were trying to build up from the back. And Onana just ran out of his goal and it was like, guys, you need to stop giving the ball to Harry Maguire. Like, just
and he literally intercepts a pass to Maguire. To cut it away from him at the 18.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, stop and giving the ball to Harry.
Like, his internal monologue was like, Harry, my brother in Christ, I love you, but like, you keep kicking it into the crowd for absolutely no reason. We need to stop this. So, this was such an odd thing. That felt like a Sunday league move. This is like when you have a guy, like, stop that. Someone needs to stop.
Yeah, the guy who's been kicking the ball into the crowd intercepts the ball from the other guy that tends to kick the ball into the crowd.
And we're burying 15 different leads here, but that was like a thing that for me stood out. But let's try to do this in good order.
I would say that's the moment, that's the second best moment we had the biggest laugh.
The
first is coming, is still.
Well, there were a few. Like, okay, so again, the buildup of this was we weren't expecting this to be even interesting. We were expecting a total non-event. And then the game starts, and of course we get Scotty McTominay, who now I think we all accept that Scott McTominay's role in this team and in life is to be like a box crashing, not even like a box to box midfielder, but he's kind of turning into Sean Dyche era Ashley Barnes at Burnley, like almost like a second striker. I think that's almost where he's the most useful.
He's kind of like Thor's hammer.
Yeah, like just a big.
There's nothing subtle
scary,
about it.
Like the opposite of a tricksy, a trick artista, a clever number 10, but a guy you use as a number 10 just because he makes these very, like, you know what, he's turning into like a poor man's Michael Ballack. Now Ballack used to be amazing at making these runs into the box and getting on the end of things.
I don't know if anybody's ever made that comparison before. Lars, but you know what, you might be on to
something. Homeless man's Michael Ballack. A poor man isn't quite enough.
A Scottish.
But no, this is Michael what he does. Ballack. I honestly think this is what Scott McTominay does better than anything else and where he can really make an impact at this level. He does make these runs. But already then, we had identified and kept scratching our heads about this. They were playing a McTominay-Kobbie Mainoo double pivot. And McTominay is making these forward runs because it's what he does. But Kobbie Mainoo was also making So United kept being in a position where, like, McTominay was making runs into the box, Mainoo was moving forwards, and there was just no midfield. Like, the midfield was just absent.
Well, no.
And Diogo Dalo
was paling into the center.
Yeah, was creeping into midfield because, like, someone has to be there. And we would just kept looking at this. Like, there's no way you can do this for 90 minutes against, like, Mo Salah and Darwin Nunez and Luis Diaz without just getting massacred on the counterattack. There's just more space than in actual space. Like, this has become, we're into the realms of astrology here.
To be clear, what we are describing was happening at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
That was the tactical setup in minute 10.
Mm-hmm.
Or 5 or 20 or whatever it was. And we just kept pointing at all the empty space in the field every time. It was just so weird.
And I was texting a friend of mine who knows the game well and knows United well. And I was like, United are playing without a midfield. Like, I've not seen this. And should they maybe consider, like, it's bad for a team to not have a midfield. Should they maybe considering hiring, I don't know, some kind of coach or a team manager or a character like that who can kind of coach them and take training and explain to them that you need to have a human being in the midfield area to be successful at the game of soccer. This was kind of the level of sarkiness I was with United earlier in the game. And rightly so, I think, because this was a total mess. From them.
Such a weird game.
But on the upside, as much as this was a total mess, we were seeing, an effort and a sharpness and an aggression to United that was better than we've seen before. Like, structurally, it was all over the place. But players were at it. They were on the front foot, and they were aggressive. And I'd like to flag up, again, I'm burying the lead, but I'd like to flag up Marcus Rashford, because I thought this was a really positive Marcus Rashford performance. And there's been so much talk about how bad he's been recently that it's worth pointing out that this was a lot closer to, like, old Rashford, I thought.
I agree. And there have been a few occasions this season where United, just as a collective unit, look like they're all really putting out 100%+ effort. And that's what we got today. And again, the whole thing's a tactical mess, but they've got a few special players that can do special things. Mm-hmm. And the difference of them in possession versus out of possession is a whole different talking point. But today, everybody was trying hard. Rashford was running back to get back on side. Garnacho, I can't imagine how many miles Garnacho ran today.
Yeah, very good, Garnacho. And I do want to flag up this about Rashford, because I've spent quite a lot of time on the pod talking about it. Like, I was so shocked when I was at Old Trafford for the Fulham game, just to see in the flesh how detached he was from everything. Like, there were so many moments, 4 or 5 moments in this game where he clearly should have run somewhere. Either that's making a forward run or tracking back. And he just stood there. And he was playing, again, I've said it before, like a guy in his late 30s who just can't move anymore. And again, he's been accused of not caring, and we had that Players Tribune article about how he cares very much.
Don't
and
you I, dare, Lars.
I'm fully convinced that he's been carrying an injury that people just haven't communicated properly. It's the only thing that makes sense to me, yeah, is that his body hasn't been cooperating properly. Because in this game, you know, he was chasing things, and he was chasing things deep into extra time. He was making runs and stuff of a kind of nature that he wasn't a few weeks ago and that people were getting fed up with. And I just kind of wish, if that is the case, and it's the only thing that makes sense to me, is that he's had a physical problem. I don't understand why they just don't tell people that. Like, just tell Marcus has a problem with his body, but he's playing through it to help the team, but he's a little bit... Just tell people. It's fine. There's no harm in telling people that. And it would make things easier for him, because then maybe he'd get less abuse for not running more, right? Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, I do. And the fact that they haven't said that makes me wonder if, in fact, he doesn't have an injury and this is
and
all the other
stuff. And he was
just
hanging around for no reason.
Yeah. Or just a mental state. You know?
I think he was. Anyway, the point being... even though he had some misses and some stuff, you point out, I said this to you in the living room earlier, like, this is good Rashford. He was like, yeah, well, he's missed a few one-on-ones. Like, this is true. But for me, I'm seeing the signs of, like, him making runs, played some really clever passes as well, actually. Like, this was good Rashford.
And I'll point out one particular moment late in the second half. United takes a shot. The ball is blocked. And as United regain possession of it, he's making a clear 100% effort to get back onside because he knows the ball's coming back to him out wide.
Yep.
And there's, I can't tell you how many times in the last 2 or 3 seasons where he doesn't even try to get back onside. The 100%. Ball just triples out or he gets called for offside. And that was the big, that was the really singular moment to me that really stood out of, okay, there's the Rashford we need.
Yeah, so again, my big annoyance with the Players Tribune thing was that he said, oh, I'm just a lad and stuff. Which is like, no, you're not. Marcus, my friend, you're not just a lad. You're 26 and one of the best paid players in the league. Like, you're not allowed to you're not going to get sympathy for having that many off days and all this. But this, again, not a perfect performance. He made some misses, whatever. But I thought in terms of application, this was the kind of performance you're expecting from someone who is in his prime and one of the best paid players at the club and should really, like, be pulling the cart, and if that makes sense. And yeah, so credit to Marcus Rashford, I thought. And again, you mentioned Garnacho. Absolutely fabulous today. But I don't know to what extent it's worth even recapping the game, because I'm assuming most people saw it. I felt weird about it at halftime, because again, structurally, United were an abomination. I thought, like, tactically, there's just so much space. I don't understand what's going on. But in terms of effort and application, it was good. And then the two goals they conceded, kind of unlucky, I thought. Like, first one from McAllister takes a big deflection, which means Onana can't get to it. Second one, okay, it's a pretty good Onana save that just drops straight to Salah. It's like, you're not having a good day when that's how these things happen. I know the defending wasn't good, particularly for the first one.
I thought you could point fingers at all kinds of moments of bad defending on all of those.
Yeah.
But yeah, to your point, Onana really wasn't at fault in any of those.
No, and there was an element of bad luck, I thought. As much as Liverpool had so many dangerous moments on the counter, because United just had decided that the midfield doesn't need to be a thing, the actual goals were kind of unlucky, I kind of thought.
Yeah, I agree.
So we go into halftime, and in the second half again, I thought Liverpool were mostly in the ascendancy, and we were both thinking, like, how haven't Liverpool scored more goals here? But they didn't, which meant that the further the game went on, it was still a one-goal game. Like, that was, I said to you, at one point, the weird thing about this is that this is still a one-goal game. And I did say towards the end that and in fairness, I said this at FC Dallas yesterday, so I'm not always right, but like my live betting...
Or were you wrong last night about this?
My live betting spidey sense was tingling in the second half, because as much as Liverpool had huge chances and been the better team... It was still a one-goal game. United were throwing on attackers. They were getting some openings. And I thought, you know what? If I was in a territory where betting was legal, I would be straight on the website, straight onto the Betson website, and putting a live bet on United to get something here. Because I just kind of thought United were creeping back into the game. And in the end, they got the equalizer from Anthony, of all things.
With his right foot.
Yeah. Which is like, this is it's a level of weirdness, because Anthony is like, I have very few positive things to say about Anthony, like in as a general rule. But
wait a second, you haven't even mentioned the fact that they took off Kabimenu and put on Eriksen.
Yeah, and this was, we were making all kinds of jokes. Like, you already had no midfield, and now we're bringing Eriksen into the fold. And I guess the formation towards the end, I'm just going to get the timeline right in my head. Towards the end of that game, when they were desperately chasing an equalizer, and Ten Hag knows this is kind of, you know, the last chance of glory this season, and you're just kind of desperate. You're throwing on attackers left, right, and center, and you end up in a situation where I think the formation was kind of like a 3-4-1-2, where you had a back three of Diallo, Maguire, and Lindelof. The two holding midfielders were like Eriksen and Fernandez, which is pretty wild. And Anthony and Garnacho were playing as wing backs. McTominay as this sort of box crashing destroyer, the object of chaos, and Rashford and Diallo up front. Like, this is a weird ass structure.
It was. We were really having a hard time figuring out what was going on. Because remember when they scored the tying goal and then lined up for the restart?
Yeah.
And we were like looking at the screen going, wait, who's playing?
Yeah.
Because Anthony and Diallo were standing next to each other to the right of the ball, on the right side of the field.
Yeah. Yeah, very confusing state of affairs. And you made the point. I mean, this is such a Peter Welton thing to worry about. But when United were chasing the equalizer, you were like, well, look at this team. If they do get the equalizer, they're going to get massacred an extra time. Because like this lineup makes no sense.
They have one center back out there.
Well, I mean, they had two, Maguire and Lindelof. But maybe you're just not counting Maguire as a footballer at this point.
Oh, no. I mean, I forgot, because they had moved Lindelof out wide, so yeah, okay, they did have two. But he wasn't playing as their center.
Yeah,
well,
even
maybe
then,
he was.
I mean, there was so much. I should have written this down. I should have taken notes. I didn't know we were going to do this. But like, there was one moment amidst all of this chaos where a ball was played over the top for Maguire to race onto.
That was another comic moment.
We had Maguire racing on in behind and hitting it with his left on the bounce. And Lindelof almost scored a great goal as well. So with about 52 attackers on the field,
it was ridiculous.
It was just pure chaos. It was a kind of, I mean, again, sometimes chaotic soccer is much better than good soccer, I would say. I know I've been here for, I'm using the S word, but like, I feel this way. I increasingly feel this way about the sport. I'm less and less concerned about whether something's good, and more concerned about whether it's funny.
Well,
so
this
was the perfect,
peak funny.
Just the perfect game for me. There was so much nonsense going on that didn't make any sense.
Can we just talk about Liverpool for a bit?
Yeah,
because I mean, if you were looking for funny, Liverpool losing this game, going full Man United by getting caught completely and ridiculously out of shape.
Yeah.
And out of position,
that is true.
Is pretty much the peak of funny.
Yeah, no, we are getting to that. I mean, that's towards the end of extra time, but we go into extra time, which is when I felt kind of sad, because it looked like the game had been won by Harvey Elliott, who is, again, far be it from me to offer fashion advice, but his decision to like wear a bowl of noodles on his head seems like a very strange sort of. who likes this? Like, I know we have about five. Five, that's generous. Three female listeners, I think. That's roughly where we are. Can you write in and explain to us, like, do any of you find the noodle head thing appealing? Because I don't think it's a strong look.
I would suggest maybe he find a sponsorship with a ramen shop.
Maybe that's
in
what
Liverpool.
It is. Yeah, noodle head. Harvey Noodlehead Elliott with a fine strike, which was an infuriating way for what we thought at the time was United to lose the game. Because again, it's another big deflection. So poor old Onana is like completely out of it. That's not that when you see it first real time, you think, should Onana get to that? And then you just see how bad that deflection is, and you think, yeah, no, he's not getting to that. But the point is, again, maybe someone should have closed him down. Like, Harvey Elliott is given a lot of time in a good shooting position, and just no one can get close to him.
Yes, but I think the other part that we're talking about leading up to that really baffled us was the number of times, because United is such a mess tactically, the number of times Liverpool would get the ball, go on transition, and had 3-on-2 advantages, 4-on-2 advantages, or at least even man advantages at worst, and still couldn't even turn them into shots on goal.
Yeah.
Full credit to Diallo, who multiple times came back and just kind of took the ball away from Liverpool players unexpectedly.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, Liverpool should have won the game long before this ever happened, because they just were given way too many opportunities to put this thing to bed.
They should have, and this is a goofy comparison, but I made the point during the game that in a way, the second half reminded me a little bit of that completely unhinged Tottenham-Chelsea game.
Yes.
Where Tottenham had two red cards and Chelsea just, yeah. Because in the way that you were just looking at it and there were so many dangerous opportunities on the counter that were just squandered, and just in the way the game was flowing, you're just, how is this still competitive? Like, how hasn't the other team scored three goals on counterattacks? But Liverpool kept wasting those chances and United stayed in it and got the equaliser. But then Noodlehead, Harvey Elliott...
Noodlehead.
...looked like he had won it. With this and that's the only point, like when the air kind of went out of the room a little bit and we both started checking our phones and stuff, and it's like, oh, okay, well that was fun while it lasted. But it didn't end that way. And United actually equalized after one of these high regains, like one of the which the whole reason
Nunes.
Yeah, and the reason they end up with this incredibly stretched team, as we've said before, is because they are trying to press high with their front players, but they don't want to move the back line up because they're so slow. So you end up with just like acres of grass. That's poor old Casemiro and Kobbie Mainoo are trying to cover. Well, today it was Kobbie Mainoo and McTominay, and then later Eriksen and McTominay. And it's just this dumb midfield setup that makes no sense and usually doesn't work. On the flip side is they are quietly not terrible at forcing turnovers high up the field, United. They do manage to do it sometimes, and they manage to do it. And we saw, again, proper sort of Twilight Zone, flying pigs outside the window moment of McTominay just perfectly waiting a pass. Like, my pet peeve with McTominay is that his passing is usually so sloppy. He just kind of kicks the ball in the direction of his teammate. He doesn't do this thing of put it on his right side or wait it properly for what comes next. He just kicks it towards him. Like, he's got there's no culture to his passing. But here, in this moment of truth, he just lays it perfectly into the pass of McTominay in Rashford, so he can swing at the ball. He doesn't have to adjust himself. He doesn't have to do anything. Perfect, perfect pass.
On his fifth opportunity.
Of course. But a great pass from McTominay, which is lesser spotted, into Rashford to score. And we're at 2-2 and we're thinking... penalties. Like, you'd take penalties at this point. I certainly would have. I'm not sure you were worried about the penalties as well.
I did begin to wonder. Wait, did that make it 2-2 or 3-3? That
3-3,
made it 3-3.
Sorry.
Yeah, right. Sorry, I was confused. At some point, I was just kind of resolved to getting penalties because the fact that we'd even gotten to 3-3, I thought, well, that's a win right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the idea that you actually got back, you came back, you took the lead, you lost the lead, you tied it, you lost the lead, you tied it. That seems like an achievement for this team. So yeah. I was pretty happy with that.
And the commentators were even starting going, well, you know, some of these United players are very close to cramping up. Like, is that going to be a problem when they take penalties? Because cramp in the run-up is a thing that happens, right?
Sure.
So that's where we were at. This was clearly going to penalties. And I remember when Liverpool got that corner right towards the end, you were making a lot of noises. Like, Peter Welpton was convinced that Virgil van Dijk was going to crash home a header from this corner. He was so annoyed after all of this. And I said, like, this game does not deserve to end with a set-piece goal. There's a pet peeve of mine when great games of football are kind of decided by a late corner and like a big, lunky centre-half just kind of headed. I hate that. That's not how great games should end.
No, and United, to be fair, are so poor at defending set pieces, particularly corners in general. And it just felt like, okay, here it comes. It wouldn't have surprised anybody if Liverpool had won the game right there and then.
Not at all. But what came instead,
alas,
of course, they cleared it. And again, this team, half of whom are cramping up, managed to pull one more wholehearted transition with Garnacho.
Unbelievable.
Incredibly still has juice in his legs. Garnacho, I know, I was surprised by this. I was spending some time with United fans when I was at the game, and quite a few of them are like not huge Garnacho fans. Maybe they were outliers, but they were getting quite annoyed with him because, you know, he does lose possession quite often because he constantly tries for stuff. But I just think he's a perfect guy to have in a team that's kind of not perfect and going through some troubles, because his confidence is just endless. Like, he never gets discouraged.
Never.
He works really hard. He keeps trying. He's one of those guys. He's like the anti-Jadon Sancho. Like, Jadon Sancho, if he screws up once, his head drops and he doesn't want to try it again. Whereas Garnacho can screw up three times and he will try it the fourth, because he just seems to have this completely bulletproof confidence. And I think in the season United are having, that's a great thing to have in your team. And I was really impressed by just his stamina. Like, he had the legs to just go get on his bike and run.
To that point, master question.
Yeah.
In the game, there was a moment where the ball goes out on the touchline and the camera is right there.
Mm-hmm.
And he slides out and his sock is down.
Mm.
Can somebody confirm for me that Anthony Garnacho has had his bicycle kick from earlier this season tattooed on his calf?
That seems like big Garnacho energy. I'm sure he has. Maybe people can look it up. Maybe we should have looked it up before recording.
I did try to look it up, and I don't see it on here anywhere.
Yeah. Point being, he leads the transition.
Sorry.
And again, I don't actually love his delivery to Diallo. In real time, I was like, oh no, like he's messed this up, because he forces Diallo to take a finish on his left from a pretty strong. And actually, I was thinking Diallo probably should try to cut it back to Garnacho here, because it's ended up being a really tricky finish on the left, not really in balance.
Well, Garnacho's pass is just off enough that Diallo actually has to take the ball away from goal.
Is the point, yeah.
And that, I think that's the, Diallo's finish was perfect. I assume that's what he was trying to do, absolutely. And wasn't just a screwed up cross, you know, push back to Garnacho, but it was great all the way around.
Very technically well executed finish by Diallo, who then, and again, you all saw this, I think this is the perfect end to this game of all chaos, is that he gets himself sent off for taking his shirt off when he's on a yellow card. I mean, God bless, this is the only way this game could have ended. You couldn't just celebrate, and then we need an extra sort of moment of madness at the end of this.
It was funny. At what point, how much earlier in the game did we look at each other and go, you know, the only thing this game is missing is an ejection.
We need a red card here.
Yeah.
And we got Diallo, having scored the winning goal, clearly.
It was just
heading off down the tunnel. It's like, I'm out of here, guys. I've done the work.
The video shot at the end of him getting sent off and walking down the tunnel and handing his shirt to a fan and then putting his hands in the prayer position.
Well, that was
the
sort of apologies thing.
Yeah,
like,
please
forgive me for doing this. Perfect end.
And then I went full tight sphincter for the last 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, thinking, you were upset again. You thought they were going to...
Well, yeah, wouldn't...
Because you're down to 10.
Yeah, at this point, it would totally make sense.
I've done you all a disservice. I should have filmed Peter Welton throughout. I mean, that would have been a moment. There was a lot of you losing your cool throughout this afternoon.
It was probably a lot of performance because you were here.
No, I don't think so. I think this game just kind of brought it out of you.
You think?
Yeah, as everyone who listens to this pod will know, Peter is kind of like, he's pretty mellow. And he's so despondent about United in general that he's kind of mentally checked out about this season for United. But like this game triggered some feelings.
Yeah.
In Peter Welton, it was a wonderful thing to see.
I don't know if they showed this the shot everywhere, but there was a here in the States at least. They shut at the after Diallo scored. They kind of quickly turned to the crowd and had a close up of this little kid in the knit cap, completely losing his ass. And that was me.
Yeah, so that was a quick 27-minute recap of what we just saw. But more to the point.
Hey, what time does United get drawn against City?
Yeah, is the thing. Well, no, that's not the joke. The joke is when does City get Coventry, because it just seems to be the way these things go. We want them in the final, surely. Mm.
You want a Manchester derby in the final?
I would love that. Let's pivot to more sort of big picture stuff. What does this mean? It does mean Klopp isn't going to play Guardiola again in England.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I was
great
pretty
point.
Convinced. We said this on the other pod. I was pretty convinced we were going to have one more matchup between those two, and it is not happening. And it is this wacky, completely bizarro United team.
And who was the idiot that asked if the FA Cup mattered anymore?
Yeah, exactly right. The magic of the Cup is.
What a ding dong.
So there was. I shouldn't tell you guys because I'm planning on like copying this maybe next season. But there was a newspaper in the UK. Their social media team once did like on one of the cup weekends of like magic of the FA Cup level update, and they would just post a photo of like something either very magical or not magical at all. So there was like when it wasn't exciting, they posted a photo of like some sort of amateur magician at a kid's party. And then when it got a bit more magical, they posted a photo of, like, David Blaine.
Yeah.
And then when something crazy happened, they posted like a wizard. You could do the sort of how magical is the cup right now. I did think, should I Google, if I just magic of the cup update and just have a big sort of Gandalf shoot or something very magical going on. Because there was a lot of cup magic over 90 minutes. This thing was drenched in cup magic. This cup magic has gone everywhere.
There was, you know, you're right.
An explosion of cup magic.
This weekend, I mean, obviously the City Newcastle game was nothing to write home about, but the Coventry win was a big deal.
Yeah, the oil Classico was really underwhelming. Two deflected goals, I guess that's kind of interesting. But yeah, you got the late Coventry winner. You had a really goofy Chelsea-Leicester game, which honestly I think we could have done an entire pod on as well.
Is that Diassi own goal the greatest own goal of all time in the... At this level?
Yeah. Special stuff from Diassi there. And it's just the kind of season Chelsea are having, I guess. But like, I don't want to leave the United-Liverpool game just yet. Because what does this mean for United? Does it mean anything?
No.
I mean, it's one more cup game this season, I guess. Can you... I wonder if... I mean, you can take some heart from the fact that there's fight and there's aggression and there's, like, the team certainly hasn't given up on anything.
Well, we've seen that. Like I said, there's been weird moments where the team looks like they're into it and they're fighting for the shirt and all that stuff. But then there are, like, long stretches of games where it just doesn't feel that way. And I'm not sure what flips the switch on or off. Maybe it's playing Liverpool, right?
Yeah.
Because that's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe because it's an FA Cup game. Like, for example, if this had been a league game, would they have been as excited as they were today? Probably not, because it is the FA Cup and that means something else and they get to go play at Wembley. There's something at stake. So that's a good question. I don't know.
And also, like, structurally, still an absolute disaster. Like, you can't play like this every week. Like, you can't do it. But they got away with it just for sheer.
What I got a question. What do you think? Because this, after all this time, and studying it, and looking at it, and breaking down, and reading all the different tactical people's explanations of why this is so insane and wrong. What is it, Ten Hag, as the manager, sees in this that has made the decision that this is what he needs to do? Is it because he sees this is the only way they're going to be dangerous in attack?
Yeah, I guess he wants those high turnovers. He wants to try to force the high turnovers. And he doesn't want a back four this low to be caught high up the field. And I guess he's just decided we can live without a midfield. I didn't think it's weird.
I think it's
pretty strange. I've never seen a team do this. But it's and it's not working every week, but they are kind of getting some results. And that's another thing I thought about posting during the game. Do you know that famous Gandhi tweet?
Gandhi have Twitter?
Gandhi did not tweet.
God, how great would the world have Gandhi been if been Gandhi had Twitter?
He would have been amazing on Twitter.
God, that would have been
That would have been quite something. But that old quote, which is, I think it might not even be true, but that he was asked, what do you think of Western civilization? And he replied that it would have been a very good idea. Like, that might have been debunked. I'm not sure that's actually true, but that's always been like one of those famous quips of history, which may or may not have happened. I thought about posting like a picture of Gandhi, like, what do you think of the Man United midfield? I think it would have been a very good idea.
It would have been a very good idea.
Yeah.
It is really...
You can't keep doing this.
Today was great in large part because normally I watch games by myself, but to be able to sit with somebody who I feel like is tactically astute in you and knows the game knows the game better than I do, and for you to confirm for me that what I've been complaining about all season is accurate and you're just as confused and frustrated about it as I am, felt very justifying, so thank you.
And I'm sure we'll see this on like The Athletic or one of these places where they have actual tactics writers who know this a lot better than we do. There were so many moments where you could just pause, take a screenshot and just point, look,
yes,
this big area of green, this is where the midfield should be. Where are the guys?
And you know what? This is something we didn't talk about. Is there an element to this tactic where it just completely confuses the opponent?
Yeah, I think this is a good point. And I think that's one of the things.
Like, the Liverpool guys are like, where do I go? There's nobody in the middle of the field.
And also, it does mean those guys who should be in midfield, who have run forward, they turn up in like unexpected areas and you get like overloads here and there.
It wasn't very long into the game that Lars kept pointing out that United had the ball in Liverpool's half, and Juan Bissaka, who's playing left back, is literally over past the 18-yard mark, and Dalot, the right back, is essentially standing 15 yards deep into Liverpool's half of the field, in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
And there's maybe one, maybe two of the center halves behind him, and that's it.
And that must be the plan, though. I mean, Ten Hag must have said, listen, McTominay and Kobbie are going to be allowed to go, so someone's got to step in. That's probably Dalot's job to be the guy. This sort of inverted fullback type of thing that they're doing, that's all the rage now. But there was, again, a moment in the first half where, like, Kobbie Mainoo did some really neat footwork down the flank and put a cross in that McTominay got on the end of, or almost got in the end of. And I thought, like, this is good. This is good football. But those are your double pivots. There's like one double pivot crossing it to the other. Like, one of them going forward is usually a bit bad. Both of them? Like, what's happening here? So this just, it's completely unhinged, and it made for an incredibly entertaining spectacle. I'm not sure, and we haven't even talked about this, Liverpool, man. Like, what happened there?
You said it at the beginning, what, 2 or 3, 5, 10 minutes into the game, like, they just don't look like they're up for this.
No.
And they didn't. And then they kind of finally got their feet settled, and once United scored, that kind of woke them up, and they obviously got their act back together and scored the goals and took the lead. And they still kind of controlled the game for the longest amount of time, but then they just kind of wore out. He made some weird substitutions.
Yeah, some of those were a bit goofy.
Which I'm sure is just a resting players kind of thing, or just...
Because they played... Yeah, and I just think if... Klopp wouldn't do this, because he's like camp counselor, let's make everyone feel good about themselves type of coach. But if this team had been coached by Jose Mourinho, right, he could and probably would have made like a video analysis meeting where he could just show 20 times where like a different decision on the ball, like a different pass,
and we
have a goal here.
Yeah,
like there were so many moments where like clearly you should play it here, and they just made the wrong decisions.
It's funny, you hadn't come down, or you were doing something, and they were showing an interview with Klopp prior to the game, and the media guy said to him, you know, United, the last time you played United, they may be the last team that had prevented you from scoring.
Mm.
And Klopp kind of took umbrage of that and said, well, to be fair, that's really about us not completing our chances and not making the right decision on the final pass or not making the right decision on the shot. And lo and behold, it happened again today.
Yeah.
Now, they scored, obviously, today.
But they've missed a lot of chances then.
But they should have won this game in regulation going away. I was so convinced when it was 2-1 that it was going to end 3-1, 4-1, especially when they put Eriksen on.
You currently have a black hole in midfield. Like, your midfield doesn't exist. It was like, here comes Eriksen.
But here's the thing. What happened when Eriksen came on and we looked at each other, you said to me, you know how this is going to end. This is going to end with Scott McTominay finishing off a rebound or hitting a header started by Eriksen.
Yeah. It almost went that way. It was. He got the assist, Scott McTominay, for Rashford at least.
God, this was great entertainment.
It was true. It was one of the most entertaining.
And I swear to everybody listening, I know I'm a United fan, and I know everybody thinks I'm only in this mood because United won this game. I promise you that if Liverpool had won in the same ridiculous manner, this game was just so entertaining. And because Lars was here, too, I would have been in the exact same mood.
I don't think you would have, but that's fine.
Oh, okay.
I heard the noises you made when Liverpool had chances. And listen, I know you're a live and let live kind of guy, but don't deny yourself the
joy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And be honest about this.
Maybe, I don't know. I just, it's so easy. I think part of it's a defense mechanism as a fan of a team that's just so such a calamity, for me at least, that I just tend to laugh off when things get really, really bad.
Yeah. No, I do that too. I mean, I wouldn't have survived puberty as a Tottenham fan if I didn't have some kind of capacity for like self.
Yeah, you yesterday watching Spurs get pummeled by Fulham. That was pretty interesting.
It was whilst we were on live radio.
Yeah, so I'm sitting here like talking live on the radio, and I look out of the corner of my eye. Lars is like pounding his fist on the table,
Well, no, I couldn't do that because that would have made noise. I was waving my arms a lot and just sort of doing very
flapping in the wind,
very Italian style gestures with my hands. Like, what are you doing to me? And also, I mean, that feels like a good place to finish, actually.
Yes.
With my prediction, with my parlay prediction, with my betting thing.
This may be the highlight of the week.
Four games in the Premier League. I said no clean sheets. Everyone's going to score, and one team let me down. And it was Tottenham, the previously free-scoring Tottenham, who always score. And who messed this up for me? Of course, it was Fulham who messed this up for me. The team I keep, like, not taking seriously enough stopped Tottenham from, obviously, inflicted a grievous wound on their Champions League hopes. But also ruined my everyone to score. Which, honestly, Tottenham generated an XG of 2 point something. Like, I stand by that prediction. I think that was a good call. 5 times your stake returned for everyone to score this weekend, and we lack one, and that's Tottenham. Like, again, I would make that bet again every day of the week. I think we were on the right track there, but yeah, what could be more Tottenham than messing that up for me against Fulham of all teams? Great, great stuff. Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. I enjoyed recording it. Hopefully you enjoyed listening to it. And what a way to end this section of football, club football, I should say, because we're heading straight into an international break. Yeah, it brings me back to my classic dilemma of, like, I, in principle, really love international football. But sometimes it's just like after that game, you just go, oh, okay, now what we really need now is a long break until we get more club football. That's not how I feel right now. But off we go into the international week. We'll see what kind of what we do with the pod during the international week. I'm sure there'll be some episodes. And if not, well, not even if not, there will be episodes. We'll figure out what to do with it. Maybe we'll do a Q&A. I've been pondering we'll do an Ask Lars thing, which is really just me being too lazy to think of a good subject and hoping you guys can do it for me, and then we call it a Q&A. I think we'll do that quite soon. I enjoy those. Anyway, the good times were had, I thought, these last 3 episodes. I have enjoyed them. I hope you have too, and I hope we'll hear each other again very soon. Bye!